This is Forecasting Innovation, the podcast by EUMETSAT. My name is Christina Bonanati, and together with EUMETSAT's chief scientist Paolo Ruti, we explore the frontiers of technology in satellite operations and weather science. The Meteosat third generation sounder MTGS-1, Europe's first geostationary sounder, was launched early this July. It marks a new era of high-frequency atmospheric observations. So in our last episode of Forecasting Innovation, we explored what it takes to translate this remarkable technical achievement into real societal value. Paolo Ruti and Marianne Thuring, Director General of the Danish Meteorological Institute, shared how national weather services prepare for such mission, from securing funding and political support to upgrading infrastructure and operations. And today we'll hear EUMETSAT's chief scientist Paolo Ruti in conversation with our guest Nadia Fourier, expert in data assimilation and satellite meteorology at Météo France. Together, they'll share their expertise on the infrared sounder and atmospheric monitoring, discuss the challenges and opportunities in data assimilation, and explore the synergies between MTGS-1 and Europe's broader Earth observation system. So, Paolo, would you please be so kind and introduce our guest today?
One other aspect just that maybe is, would be useful to mention, that is where new directions for meteorology to see the relevance of satellite data is the fact that not only traditional numerical weather prediction models are now used for weather prediction, but also machine learning, AI, artificial intelligence application, and also Météo France is involved in all of these. How do you see this developing and helping exploiting the satellite data?
Artificial intelligence is a big challenge. So at the beginning, for hyperspectral observation, there were some challenges about the size and the volume of the data. And we have performed channel selection or thinning or special thinning to decrease the number of observations. We have calculated that IRS data will represent 2050 gigaoctets of files every day. So it's a very huge volume of data to handle and to process in real time, because it is important to keep in mind that numerical weather prediction is only useful if it is run in real time. So we have to handle a large volume of data. And we have had in the past and currently some techniques such as channel selection or spatial sampling, or even the use of principal component analysis to compress the spectrum of 1,097 channels into 300 pieces, principal component. And you are right. Now there is the machine learning and the artificial intelligence, which offers new perspectives. So there is some perspective of replacing the forecasting model. So we need to establish the initial state of the atmosphere, and then we replace the forecasting model with machine learning. But there is a step beyond, which consists in ingesting all the observation, including satellite observation, and to deliver a forecast. That is a very exciting topic, but we are not yet, even if there is some studies at the European Center for Medium-Range Weather Forecast that shows that there is a large potential of improvement of the forecast with the artificial intelligence.
Actually, ECNWF started to be operational with their AI forecast system last year, and now they are operational this year with the ensemble prediction AI system. So as you said, there's a lot of work happening at the global scale. Now the main effort is to see how this global scale improvement can actually be translated to improvement at regional scales. And this is where AI will make even more important the data. So basically AI, in a very, let's say, very friendly definition, is capable to learn what is already into the data. So if you have data that are capable to represent processes or storms at the resolution of 500 meters or 1 kilometers, so they are able to learn something from the data. But if the data does not represent that scale or that process, of course, they can't learn what is not there. And this is why the satellite data we are mentioning today is around 4 kilometers, but we already launched a few years ago, and now is operational in 2022, the Meteosat Imager. And there we have information at 500 meter or 1 kilometer. It's, of course, information on the clouds or information on other geophysical parameters, not the vertical layers that we were speaking about, the sounder, but it's the we can see something amazing at 500 meter resolution from 36,000 kilometers. So I think this is where probably the combination of all this data will become very important, as Nadia mentioned. And also it brings us to the topic that in the sky, we don't have one single satellite. We have different satellites. Even in one single satellite, like the Meteosat third generation, we have in the sounder, as we mentioned, and then we have the Sentinel-4. Sentinel-4 is a Copernicus mission, so it's co-organized with the European Commission, Copernicus Service, and also EUMETSAT and ESA. They are collaborating on this, which is measuring over Europe different air quality chemical compounds and characterizing carbon, NO2, nitrogen dioxide, and many others. And so that also is, it helps to provide a combination of information, not only for weather prediction, but also for air quality. And this is where the synergies between instruments is very important. But there are also other synergies across different satellites. And by not earlier than the 12th of August, with the Ariane Space, we will launch our second generation EUMETSAT Polar system. That's important also for meteorology. And maybe, Nadia, you can tell us a little bit what is the difference between geostationary and polar system orbit for meteorology. That's also maybe a starting point to understand a little bit the difference.
So, as you mentioned, that geostationary satellites are located at 36,000 kilometers from the Earth, and they are observing the same part of the Earth. They can represent easily the tropics and the tropical region and the mid latitude, but it's difficult to see the polar region. Polar orbiting satellites are complementary to the geostationary satellites, as they are flying above the Earth in 100 of minutes every 1 hour and 20 minutes. And they are overpasses over the polar region very frequently. So both kinds of satellites are used in synergy. They allow us to see all the Earth. And polar orbiting satellites are located closer to the Earth at an altitude of about 800 of kilometers. And with the infrared sounder on Bond's Meteosat third generation and the METOP second generation with YAZI new generation, we will have hyperspectral data to well represent the atmosphere everywhere over the globe.
The YAZI, which is probably the father of all hyperspectral instruments, I think is proud of Europe and specifically of France, the the technology developed for the hyperspectral measurement. And I think YAZI will, and IRS, they use the same technology, so they are able to distinguish, to detail very high resolution all many channels into the visible and near infrared and infrared. And as you mentioned, you have more than a thousand channel for one single point pixel. And so you can imagine the amount of data that all these satellites they produce. And it's not like being home having the 5G where you can have a very fast uplink or downlink. You are still in space and technology, it's still working with microwave, but still you have some limitation. And this is the infrared. So as you mentioned, we have the possibility to combine the two because they are same type of measurements, and this is characterizing the possibility to have much more data on infrared for the atmosphere. But on the polar system, we have also other instruments that are looking to the sounding. So they are looking down to the atmosphere and derive information. One is the microwave sounder, which will be on the same satellite we will launch with Ariane. And the other one is the radio occultation. Maybe we can start with the microwave. We can play a bit of the game. You explain microwave, I will explain radio occultation. Then we see how it goes.
Okay. yeah, of course. So microwave sounder, well-known sounder that we are using since many years, but they are also providing some information on temperature and humidity, and they can be used in synergy with infrared observation because microwave observations are less sensitive to clouds and precipitation. So they can offer a global coverage of the Earth, and we are still having some synergies between the both kinds of observations. So they are very complementary to infrared, and they are also very important for the quality of the forecast.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And we should also remind, maybe there are some decision makers listening this podcast, that for the weather prediction system, either AI or traditional ones, what at the moment, the more you put in terms of information on the sounding on the different layers of the atmosphere, the better the forecast you get. There is no saturation at the moment. That is important to highlight. That yeah. is it's an important information because it's even if it is a thin layer, so 10 kilometers around the Earth is a very thin layers, but everything is happening there. We live there, by the way, so we live in that 10 kilometers, so it's important. And all the different phenomena that we see, extremes, even exacerbated by the climate change, they are because this thin layer of fluid is stratified and is rotating. These two ingredients are making a huge difference. The other instrument we were talking is radio occultation, which is a funny one because it's a byproduct. It's not a direct measurement. You have a lot of microwave in space because we are using telecommunication, mobile phones. And so microwave is the way to telecommunicate. And so you have those satellites that they emit microwaves, they go down and you have receivers over the Earth. But some of those microwaves, like rays, they cross the atmosphere and their path is influenced by temperature and humidity. So they are deviated along the rays, deviated a little bit. And so if they exit the atmosphere on the others, because they are not impinging the land, but they are able to cross a layer of the atmosphere and to exit the atmosphere. If you have a receiver on the other side, which is usually a small satellite, it's not a big one, but if you have a receiver and then you know exactly the position of the two satellites, you can measure the angle of the deviation of this microwave array. And then if you have a lot of these angles, you can infer the temperature and humidity. And this is another way to produce sounding. And even in that case, and we demonstrated this through experiments from Meteo France and from ECNWF, also UK Met Office or DWD, all the big centers, you still get improved weather forecast because you had this type of information, which is independent to the one you mentioned before. And this is important. And this is important for what are the, let's say, the processes. We just mentioned extreme weather events. So we have flash floods in southern France, but we also in the Mediterranean, we are seeing more and more, because of climate change, small hurricanes, which are called medicanes, affecting France. And also Europe, they are coming from the Atlantic. And probably we can highlight why it's important to have the geostationary plus the polar again, because you need to look to all the development of the storms. And usually the storms, they develop on the Atlantic coast of the US. And maybe you have in mind some good example, Nadia, of forecast of very extreme storms coming from the Atlantic, where all this data is becoming important.
Yes, usually storms are coming from the US coast. As you mentioned also before, we have some extratropical transition of hurricane, and that's why it is very important to well observe this part of the Atlantic. And I did not mention it before, but polar orbiting satellites are overpasses mid-latitudes and tropics only twice a day in comparison of 30 minutes or in the best case. But we will have images at least every 6 hours from the IRS in the southern part. So that's why IRS is very useful, not only for the regional model, but also for the global prediction, because the French our model is centered over France, so it is not able to see the Western Atlantic part. So it is important to use all this information in the coupling model, the global coupling model ARPège, and this model will provide the lateral condition and will introduce the storm into the AROM model.
You mentioned this transition of a tropical cyclone. They are transiting to become a sort of extratropical storm, so it's interesting. And there's been interesting cases recently that they had a strong impact over Europe. I remember, for instance, the last year in the hurricane Kirk that moved moved north and across Spain, Portugal, and France, and Netherlands, and Belgium. So he had a lot of damage across. And I think what is important probably to highlight here is with the new observational system having sounding from the Meteosat third generation and launching soon the Polar System second generation in August, will provide this combination of sounding information from the microwave, the infrared on both, and microwave and radio occultation on the polar system. And one storm such as Kirk, the prediction of such storms and the impact would certainly be impacted and improved. And this, just to give one example of an Atlantic storm, actually an hurricane becoming an Atlantic storm, that would probably be much better predicted for the region. I think that's one important message. And Nadia, we explained very well what are the relevance of having polar and geostationary systems. Maybe if we can identify other examples, if you have in mind, or other important elements that you think your research will go through in the next few years.
The infrared spectrum offers the capability to sense a lot of particles, molecules, and variables. So the infrared spectrum is sensitive to carbon dioxide, which gives us some information on temperature and humidity, but it is also sensitive to atmospheric molecules such as ozone or carbon monoxide. So they can help us to better predict the atmospheric composition. So currently it is done in a specific model, but we are developing a new system, so-called Earth system, which takes into account all the compartments of the Earth, such as ocean, atmosphere, land surface, and also atmospheric composition. And IRS and also YASI will have the capability to provide us with the information for this future system. So they represent the future challenges for numerical prediction, which so we will not only forecast the weather, but also all the variables of the compartment. So we will be interested in land surface temperature, atmospheric composition such as ozone. We know the stratospheric ozone, which is very beneficial and useful to prevent us from the UV radiation. But there is also some ozone present near the surface, which is a pollutant and which is an irritant gas, which is damageable for the human health. So it is important to predict the concentration of this molecule. So the numerical weather prediction is extending towards new topics or new variables. And the infrared spectrum, the infrared standard, will help us to better predict the new quantities.
I fully agree that the development of prediction systems towards the Earth system is extremely important. It's not only the weather prediction, which is affecting people and life in Europe, it's also air quality, the condition of the land surface, so the ecosystem in the land surface. And so chemistry is the trait d'union, is the element that is connecting all of these. And so both YASI and the hyperspectral infrared sounder on Meteosat's third generation, they have the possibility to give us information globally and on a vast region. And then we have also both Sentinel-4 and Sentinel-5. Sentinel-4, we already said, is from Copernicus and is a collaboration with the European Commission, ESA, and EUMETSAT. And Sentinel-4 is over the geostationary platform, and Sentinel-5 is over the next polar system that we will launch in August. And both, they will give a lot of information on other chemical compounds. Tropospheric ozone is one, but other chemical volatile compounds, nitrogen dioxide, aerosol. So all of these will be much better characterized, and it will probably provide what Nadia said. It will provide this bridge of data that will bring the meteorology from the traditional weather prediction to the prediction of relevant, important parameter for day-to-day lives, air quality, but not only, probably in the future we will go farther to the quality of what is in the water, what is in the agriculture, because these chemical compounds, they don't just stay into the atmosphere. There is a big cycle, and land surface is one important component. I think this is a very good way to approach the end of this podcast, as this Earth system approach gives the idea that we will provide to citizens much more information that they would have expected from just a meteorological mission some years ago. I don't know, Nadia, what do you think?
Yeah, you're right. The weather prediction now is much more than the meteorological system prediction. So we are expecting to predict much more than temperature and humidity with some quantities such as atmospheric pollutants. That's right.
I think I would, to me, say goodbye to all our listeners. And thanks a lot, Nadia, for this very nice chat.
Yes, thanks, Paolo, and thank you, Nadia, for your nice explanations and insights. So this was Nadia Fauré, researcher and deputy director at the French National Center for Meteorological Research. Thank you.
Thank you for the invitation and goodbye.
And then we are looking forward to our next episode, where we'll be looking ahead to the 2025 HumidSat Meteorological Satellite Conference, which will actually be co-hosted with Météo France and take place in Lyon from 15th to 19th September, with a theme From Space to Safety, Earth Observation for Future Weather and Climate Preparedness. We'll explore how this year's conference is tackling some of the key challenges in weather and climate monitoring.